forehead don't have brown gunk on them anymore.
Eleonora promptly opened both eyes and studied Cimmerine.
Neither do yours. What does that mean?
It means we go back to the kitchen and test it,
Cimmerine said. She bent over and picked up the mixing bowl.
We'll clean up later. Come on.
10. In which Cimmerine and Eleonora conduct some tests and disturb a wizard. Back in the kitchen, Cimmerine and Eleonora quickly determined that the fireproofing spell had indeed worked. First Cimmerine, then Eleonora tossed a pinch of feverfew into the air and recited the spell verse, then put a hand into a candle flame and held it there. Neither was burned at all, though Eleonora claimed that the candle tickled almost as much as the eagle feather had done.
How long does the spell last?
I'm not sure exactly. At least an hour, but I'll have to do some tests to pin it down beyond that. I hope Kazul gets back soon. I want to see if it works with dragon fire.
You're going to have Kazul breathe fire at you just to see if the spell works? What if it doesn't?
Then I'll talk to Kazul and we'll go see Morwen. And the three of us will try to figure out what to change to make the spell work for dragon fire too. Don't look at me like that. I'm not going to stand in front of Kazul and have her breathe fire at me. I'll just stick out a finger the way we did with the candle.
This was not enough to convince Eleonora, but Cimmerine was determined.
The whole point of trying this spell was to make ourselves immune to dragonfire. If it doesn't work, I don't want to find out for the first time when one of Kazul's guests gets mad and breathes fire at me because he doesn't like the way I cooked his cherries jubilee.
Eleonora had to admit that this was a good point, but she was still disposed to argue. The discussion was cut short by Kazul's return. At first, the dragon was more inclined to agree with Eleonora than with Cimmerine, but after Cimmerine proved her invulnerability to candle flames, lighted torches, and the fire she had built in the kitchen stove, Kazul agreed to the trial. She insisted, however, on working up to full firepower in gradual stages, and Cimmerine was forced to agree. Before they began, Cimmerine threw another pinch of feverfew into the air and recited the couplet again, just to be sure the spell wouldn't wear off in the middle of the test. Then Kazul lowered her head nearly to the ground, and Eleonora watched nervously as Cimmerine lowered her hand slowly into various intensities of dragon flame. Finally, Cimmerine stood right in front of Kazul while the dragon breathed her hottest. The spell worked perfectly every time.
There,
Cimmerine said when Kazul stopped at last.
Now we know it works. Aren't you glad?
I'm glad, and I hope I never have to watch anything like that again as long as I live. I didn't dare blink for fear you'd go up in smoke while my eyes were closed.
Why don't you try it yourself?
No!
Said Eleonora and Kazul together.
Watching you was bad enough,
Eleonora went on with a shudder.
I believe it works. I don't see any reason for me to test it.
Besides, I've done more than enough fire breathing for one day. I'm starting to get overheated.
All right. If you don't want to, you don't have to. If we're all done, I better go tidy up.
Eleonora stayed to help Cimmerine finish cleaning up the traces of the spell, by which time she had calmed down considerably and was very nearly her usual self again. Cimmerine gave her a pouch full of dried feverfew before she left and made her recite the words that activated the spell several times to make sure she had memorized them correctly.
Remember, you only have to repeat the first half of the verse to get the spell going, now that it's been set up. Can you do it?
It's only two lines and they rhyme. How could I forget that? My memory isn't that bad.
Maybe not, but say it anyway.
Eleonora laughed again and did so. At last she set off into the tunnels, and Cimmerine went back to the main cave to see what Kazul and Roxham had found out about the caves of fire and night. Kazul was somewhat out of temper, and Cimmerine thought privately that she had been telling the truth about getting overheated. Rather than annoy the dragon further, Cimmerine asked if she could read the book Kazul had borrowed from Morwen.
It's in the treasure room. Read it there. And I hope you see something in it that we didn't.
Cimmerine nodded, picked up her lamp, and hurried off before Kazul could change her mind. The book was lying near a pile of sapphires, next to an ornate gold crown. She picked it up, went over to the table, which was large and very sturdy because it was intended for counting piles of gold and silver coins, and sat down to read. It was even drier and duller than Kazul had said. There were a great many mayhaps and perchances and wherefores strung together in long, involved sentences that compared the strange and wonderful things in the caves to obscure philosophical ideas and odd customs from places Cimmerine had never heard of. After a few pages, Simran put the book down and went and got a quill pen, an ink pot, and some paper, so that she could write down the things she thought were important. She didn't want to have to read A Journey Through the Caves of Fire and Night more than once. For the next 3 days, Simran spent bits of her spare time in the treasure room, taking notes on the de Montmorency. It took her that long because she could never manage to read for more than a little while without getting so bored that she nearly fell asleep. Her persistence gained her several pages of notes about the caves, but nothing that seemed as if it might be of particular interest to wizards. Alianora came to see her a few days later, looking very cheerful.
"It worked,"
she announced as she came into the library where Simran was going over her notes.
"Caradwell's gone. Therindel rescued her just the way you said he would."
"Good. I'm glad something is going right."
"What's the problem?"
Alianora asked, seating herself on the other side of the table from Simran.
"This,"
Simran said, waving at the paper-covered table.
"K'Zool is sure that the key to what the wizards are after is somewhere in that dratted book she borrowed from Morwen. I copied out everything that looked interesting, but none of it seems like anything a wizard would care about."
"How do you know that?"
"I don't. I'm just guessing. That's the problem."
"Oh."
Alianora picked up the sheet of paper nearest her and frowned at it.
"What on earth does this mean?"
Simran looked at the page Alianora was holding.
"Thus these caves of fire and night are, in some sense, indivisible, whereas the caves of chance are, by contrast, individual. Though it is preposterous to claim that these descriptions are true of either group of caves in their entirety. That's one of the bits I copied word for word. The whole book is like that. I think it means that if you have a piece of something magical from the caves of fire and night, you can use it in a spell as if it were the whole thing."
"I can see why you wouldn't be sure. Do you think it would help you figure things out if you stopped for a while?"
"I have stopped. Or did you have something more specific in mind?"
"I'm almost out of fever few,"
Alianora said, looking down at the table.
"I was hoping you'd come with me to pick some more."
"You're almost out? How did that happen?"
Alianora shifted uncomfortably.
"I've been working that fireproofing spell every hour or so for the past 2 days. Warog has been getting more and more unpredictable, and I don't feel comfortable otherwise. Halana was visiting yesterday when he came in the middle of the afternoon, and he was roaring and dripping little bits of flame when he breathed. She was terrified, and I don't blame her. If it weren't for the spell, I'd be scared to death."
"What's the matter with him?"
"I don't know. He doesn't tell me anything about dragon politics or wizards or what he's been getting so worked up about. He's not like K'Zool."
Simran frowned, considering.
"Maybe K'Zool will have some idea what's bothering him. I'll ask her this evening. In the meantime, let's go get that fever few. You're right to say that I could use a break."
"Oh, good. I've never picked herbs before, and I'm not sure what fever few looks like. I don't know what I'd have done if you'd said you wouldn't come."
Simran put her notes away and got 2 wicker baskets and a small knife from one of the storage rooms.
"Up or down?"
Alianora asked as they left the cave.
"Up. The other way is the ledge I told you about, and I wouldn't be surprised if bits of it are still invisible."
The path through the pass of silver ice twisted and turned past the openings of other dragons' caves. Most of the rocks around the caves had scorch marks, and Simran and Alianora didn't see much growing among them.
"At this rate, we'll have to go nearly all the way to the Enchanted Forest to find any grass, much less herbs."
"Wait a minute. Look over there through that crack in the rocks. Doesn't that look like something green?"
Alianora's eyes followed Simran's pointing finger.
"Yes. It looks green."
The rock Simran had indicated was a large boulder at the bottom of a steep slope. The slope was covered with gravel and looked as if it would be impossible to climb down without skinning a knee or an elbow at the very least. The boulder itself was in 2 pieces, with just enough space between them for someone to squeeze through, provided the someone was not very large.
"Come on, let's get a better look."
She walked to the edge of the slope and wrapped her skirts tightly around her legs. Then she sat down with her basket in her lap and slid down the slope, raising an enormous cloud of dust and sounding like an avalanche in process. She reached the bottom in safety and stood up, brushing at her skirt. The dust was so thick that she could hardly see, and when she tried to call to Alianora, she coughed so hard that she could barely speak.
"Simran, are you all right?"
"It's just the dust,"
Simran said in a muffled voice. She had taken out her handkerchief and put it over her mouth and nose to keep the dust out. It wasn't perfect, but it helped a great deal.
Come on, it's your turn!
Are you sure we shouldn't just go around?
Stop staring, it's not that bad.
That's what you say,
Eleonora muttered. But she wrapped her skirts around her, clutched her basket, and slid down the slope. She made even more noise than Cimmerine had. When she got to the bottom, she was coughing and choking. Cimmerine handed her the handkerchief, and they waited for a moment while the dust settled. Crawling through the split boulder was easier than they expected. The crevice was wider than it had looked from the path, and the bottom of the crack was so full of dust and gravel and dead leaves that it was almost flat. Cimmerine and Eleonora had to walk single file, and there were one or two spots where they had to turn sideways in order to get through, but it was not really difficult. On the other side of the boulder, the two girls found a lush, green valley. It was bowl-shaped and not very large, but flowers and grasses stood waist-high between the random clumps of bushes that dotted the valley floor. A squirrel, which had been sunning itself on a ledge near the entrance, leaped for a small tree as Cimmerine and Eleonora appeared.
My goodness!
Eleonora said, looking around with wide eyes.
This place looks as if no one but us has ever been here before. There aren't even any scorch marks on the rocks.
Cimmerine blinked. Eleonora was right. Lichens covered the weathered gray rocks that rose above the valley, and small plants grew in cracks and crevices that showed no sign of the touch of dragonfire.
That's odd.
Why?
Those mountains aren't tall enough to keep dragons from flying over, and they're right in the middle of the dragon's territory. So why haven't the dragons been here? They usually keep a close eye on everything that belongs to them.
Maybe they have been here, but they never found anything to breathe fire at.
Well, I'm going to ask Kazool about it when I get back,
Cimmerine said as she waded into the grass.
Why don't you take that side, and I'll look over here. We'll cover more ground that way.
First, you'd better show me what I'm looking for. I'm afraid I couldn't tell Feverfew from carrots if there was a dragon chasing me and my life depended on it.
Cimmerine nodded, and they started off. They had not gone far when she saw a patch of the white button-shaped flowers she was looking for.
Here,
she said, showing them to Eleonora.
This is Feverfew. The younger plants are the best, the ones that haven't blossomed yet.
Eleonora studied the leaves and flowers with care.
I think I'll recognize it now.
They cut some of the plants, leaving those that were blooming.
You find the next patch,
Cimmerine said as they started off again.
Let's try over there.
They found several more patches of Feverfew, and gradually their baskets began to fill.
I think this should be enough, unless you think...
Cimmerine!
Eleonora hissed, clutching at Cimmerine's arm.
There's someone behind that bush.
Cimmerine turned. A dark line snaked through the grass where something large had bent and broken the plants in passing.
You're right,
she said, and started forward. Eleonora hung back, still holding Cimmerine's arm.
You're not going to go look, are you?
How else are we going to find out who it is?
Cimmerine asked reasonably. She shook off Eleonora's hand. Quietly, she walked over to the clump of bushes and peered around it. Eleonora followed with evident reluctance. A man in blue and brown silk robes was crouched on the other side of the bush with his back toward Cimmerine. He was stuffing saw-edged purple leaves into a small linen bag the size of Cimmerine's hand. His hair was brown, and on the ground beside him lay a long, polished staff.
Angelo?
The man snatched up his staff and straightened as if a bee had just stung him. It was indeed Antarel, and he did not look at all pleased to see her. He stuffed the linen bag quickly into his sleeve and said,
Princess Cimmerine, what brings you here?
I was about to ask you the same thing.
Wizards go where they wish, answering to no one,
Antarel said, waving his free hand in a lofty manner.
Maybe outside the Mountains of Mourning they do, but around here they have to check with the dragons first.
You know nothing of the matter,
Antarel said, looking very put out.
Cimmerine, you know this person?
I'm sorry, I should have introduced you. This is Antarel, one of the wizards I told you about. Antarel, this is Princess Eleonora of the Duchy of Toron Marsh. At the moment, she's the princess of the dragon Warog.
Eleonora curtsied, murmuring something polite and inaudible. Antarel, who had stiffened in surprise when he realized that Cimmerine was not alone, relaxed visibly.
Warog's princess? That's all right, then. though he really shouldn't have sent you.
But Balrog didn't...
Ow! Said Alianora. The ow was because Cimmerine had hastily kicked her ankle to keep her from telling Antarel too much.
Didn't what?
Antarel asked, frowning suspiciously.
Didn't know you were going to be here.
Well, of course he didn't know,
Antarel said, looking annoyed.
That's the whole point, after all.
Cimmerine would have very much liked to ask him what the point was, but she was afraid it would make him suspicious again.
I don't understand,
she said instead, batting her eyes at him.
Of course not,
Antarel replied in a condescending tone that made Cimmerine's teeth hurt.
But it doesn't matter. I'm not annoyed with you.
I'm so glad.
Antarel gave her an oily smile.
In fact, there's no need for you to tell Warog that you met me here.
I wouldn't dream of it,
Cimmerine said with perfect truth.
Excellent. Then may I escort the two of you back to the path?
Alianora looked hopefully in Cimmerine's direction.
But we can't leave yet,
Cimmerine said, opening her eyes very wide.
We haven't picked any cornflowers or daisies.
Behind her, she heard Alianora making a smothered, choking noise, as if she were trying very hard not to laugh.
Daisies? You want to stay and pick daisies?
Cimmerine nodded vigorously.
And cornflowers and flax and all sorts of things,
she said, waving her hand at the flowers blooming all around.
They'll look so pretty in a bowl of water in the kitchen.
I'm sure you're right.
He looked as if he would have liked to object, but couldn't think of anything to object to.
Perhaps I could help you,
he said reluctantly.
Oh, we wouldn't dream of keeping you.
Antarel was clearly reluctant to leave the two girls in the valley, but Cimmerine did not give him much choice. After another minute or so of conversation, the wizard was forced to go. He did not use a vanishing spell, but trudged away on foot. Cimmerine watched him until he was out of sight among the bushes, wondering whether he had some special reason not to use spells in the valley, or whether he simply didn't know the right spells to make himself vanish.
That's a relief. Why did you insist on staying when it was so obvious that he wanted us to leave? I was afraid he was going to turn us into toads or something.
I wanted to see what he was up to, and I don't think Antarel is a very good wizard. He probably couldn't manage anything worse than a squirrel.
Alianora did not appear to find this very reassuring. Cimmerine checked to make sure Antarel was out of sight, then went over to the place where he had been standing when she peered around the bush. At first, she did not notice anything unusual. Then she saw a purplish plant oozing sap from the places where several of its spiky, saw-toothed leaves had been broken off.
Look at this.
What is it?
I don't know. I saw a couple of other plants like this while we were picking feverfew, but I thought they were just weeds.
Maybe it is a weed.
A wizard wouldn't sneak into the dragon section of the Mountains of Mourning just to pick weeds. They don't even use herbs to cast spells. So what does Antarel want with this prickly-looking thing?
Alianora shrugged.
Maybe he needs it for something he can't do with magic.
I wonder what that would be.
Cimmerine reached out and carefully broke off a spray of leaves. She wrapped them in her handkerchief and put the packet in her pocket.
Let's see if we can find out whether he picked anything else.
Antarel had left a dark trail of bent and broken plants to mark the way he had come, so his path was easy to follow. Cimmerine and Alianora searched carefully along it for some way, looking for signs that the wizard had picked other herbs, but neither of them saw any.
I don't think there's anything to find,
Alianora said, pushing her apricot-colored hair out of her face.
And it's getting awfully warm.
Have you noticed that there aren't any of those purple plants along here? I'll bet that was all he wanted.
Then let's leave before that wizard thinks to circle around to check on what we're doing.
Cimmerine doubted that Antarel would think of doing such a thing, but she nodded agreement and the two girls left the valley. Alianora was quiet and thoughtful for most of the walk back to Kazul's cave. Cimmerine was grateful for her silence. She had a lot to think about herself. From what Antarel had said, it seemed likely that Warog was helping the wizard somehow, or at least that he had known what Antarel was looking for in the little valley. Cimmerine found it difficult to imagine a dragon helping a wizard, but she couldn't say with certainty that it was impossible. And if Warog was involved with Antarel and Zeminar, it might explain why he had been so touchy lately. When they arrived back at the cave, Cimmerine shook herself free of her preoccupation. She and Alianora unloaded their baskets and tied the herbs in bunches to hang in a dark corner of the kitchen to dry.
How long will it be before I can use the fever few?
I'm not sure. It will take at least a week to dry thoroughly. But you might be able to use it in the spell before then. The directions don't say how dry the fever few has to be. We could try it every day with a pinch of leaves from one of these bunches if you like.
Alianora nodded.
I really do need it.
I wonder if it would work without being dried,
Cimmerine said. She pulled a leaf from one of the hanging plants and shredded it carefully between her fingers, then tossed it up in the air and recited the rhyme.
There! Now light a candle or another lamp or something.
Alianora had already lit a candle and set it on the table. Cimmerine moved over and stuck her finger in the flame.
I think it's working,
she said, and moved the rest of her hand closer. The sleeve of her dress caught fire. Cimmerine hastily pulled her hand away from the candle and slapped at the flames, while Alianora snatched up a bucket of water from beside the sink and poured it over Cimmerine's arm. The fire went out, and so did the candle, and both Cimmerine and Alianora got thoroughly soaked.
Oh, dear!
Alianora said, ignoring her soggy skirts.
Cimmerine, did you burn yourself?
No,
Cimmerine said, looking at her arm with a puzzled expression.
I didn't feel a thing. I thought the spell worked, but nothing caught fire when we tested it before.
It must be because the fever few is fresh instead of dried. And I had hoped that I'd be able to use it right away.
If you're that low on dried fever few, take some of mine. Kazul's not particularly irritable. I only need to keep a pinch or two in case of emergencies.
Thank you,
Alianora said fervently, and Cimmerine turned her soggy cuffs back and went to get the bottled spices. 11. In which Kazul is unwell and Cimmerine makes a new acquaintance. Alianora decided to return home by way of the path outside instead of through the tunnels because it was such a nice day, and she hoped the sun would dry her skirt. Cimmerine watched her go, swinging her basket happily and humming a little, her confidence and good humor completely restored by the possession of the fat little packet of dried feverfew in her pocket.
I wish I had as little to worry about,
Cimmerine muttered, thinking of Warog and the wizards. She held the burned patch at the end of her sleeve up to get a better look at it in the sunlight and shook her head. Even the magic wardrobe would have a hard time fixing that. A puff of wind made her shiver in her wet clothes, and she turned to go back into the cave to change. A dark shadow fell over Cimmerine, and she stopped and looked up.
Kazul,
she said as the dragon landed on the open path beside her.
Am I glad to see you? Wait until you hear what's been happening.
You do appear to have had a rather strenuous day,
Kazul said, eyeing Cimmerine's wet, stained skirt and the blackened end of her right sleeve.
Nothing serious, I trust.
I'm not sure. Alianora and I went out to pick some feverfew, and we ran into that wizard Anterel.
Where was this?
Cimmerine pointed.
Up that way. There's a little round valley off to one side that looks as if dragons never go there, and...
You found a wizard there? How did he get in? How did you get in?
We climbed through a crack in a boulder. I don't know how Anterel did it. When he left, he was heading for the far side of the valley.
This is serious,
Kazul said, getting to her feet.
I'd better warn the king. He'll have to use the crystal now.
You'd better hear the rest of it first. Anterel wasn't too happy to see us, but when he found out that Alianora was Warog's princess, he relaxed. He seemed to think that Warog had sent us.
What?
Cimmerine involuntarily stepped back a pace at the anger in Kazul's voice.
He thought Warog had sent us,
she repeated, and gave a quick summary of her conversation with Anterel.
Warog!
Kazul's tail lashed, sweeping a small boulder from one side of the path to the other.
But Warog's not a fool, and only a fool would let a wizard into that valley, unless he was sure that they didn't know. What was Anterel doing?
Cutting plants, or rather, cutting a plant. It didn't look as if he took more than one.
He wouldn't need more than one, if it was the right one. What did he pick?
It was a prickly-looking purple thing with saw-edged leaves,
Cimmerine said, reaching into her pocket.
I didn't recognize it, But I thought you might, so I brought a piece back for you to look.
What?
Flame spurted from the dragon's mouth, enveloping Cimmerine. Steam hissed from her wet skirt, and the thinner material of her sleeves vanished in a crackle of sparks. The handkerchief-wrapped spray of purple leaves, which she had just taken out of her pocket to show Kazul, disintegrated into a dark, greasy-looking cloud of smoke. Cimmerine stared at the ashes in her palm, feeling very, very glad that she had decided to test the way Fresh Feverfew would work in the fireproofing spell. She felt a little warm, and her clothes had been reduced to a few charred rags, but that was nothing compared to what might have happened.
Now I understand why Alianora ran out of Feverfew.
A puff of wind brushed Cimmerine's arms, and she heard a choking sound from Kazul. She looked up, expecting to find the dragon laughing at her remark, and her eyes widened. Kazul's head was thrown back, and her mouth was wide open, giving Cimmerine an excellent view of the dragon's sharp silver teeth and long red tongue. Cimmerine skipped backward out of reach. Then she realized that the dragon was gasping for air.
Kazul! What's the matter?
The smoke!
Kazul coughed. Her voice was so hoarse that it was hard for Cimmerine to understand what she was saying.
What can I do?
Cimmerine said, trying not to feel frightened.
Green jar! Self-Lastra's room! Hurry!
Cimmerine was already running through the mouth of the cave as fast as her feet could carry her. She did not even pause as she snatched up her lamp from the floor just inside the door. It seemed to take forever to get through the twisty passages and the first two caves full of treasure. She skidded to a halt in the doorway of the third room and stood panting. Scanning the walls for the shelf in the right jar, she found it quickly and ran back at once, the jar clutched tightly in her right hand. The sound of Kazul's coughing grew louder as Cimmerine sped back the way she had come. At the mouth of the cave, Cimmerine paused and set down the lamp, then unscrewed the top of the green jar. Inside was a thick, emerald-colored liquid about the consistency of honey. She looked out at Kazul. The dragon's head jerked with each cough, and the scales on her neck were beginning to turn pink around the edges. For a long, careful moment, Cimmerine studied Kazul's movements. Then she leaned back and threw the emerald liquid, jar and all, into the dragon's open mouth, just as Kazul took another gasping breath. The jar landed on Kazul's tongue. The dragon's mouth closed, and she swallowed convulsively. Sudden silence descended.
Are you all right now?
Cimmerine asked after Kazul had taken several deep breaths without a renewed bout of coughing.
I will be.
She sounded exhausted, and her movements as she slid into the cave were slow and uncertain.
What happened?
Cimmerine said, backing out of the way so that Kazul would not have to exert herself to go around.
I got a breath of the smoke when the plant in your hand burned.
Kazul said as she settled to the floor just inside the entrance.
Lucky! It was only a breath! I'll need a few days of rest, but that's better than being dead!
Cimmerine stared at her, appalled.
What was that plant?
Dragon's Bane,
said Kazul. Her eyes closed and she slept. Kazul continued to sleep for most of the next 3 days. She woke only long enough for Cimmerine to pour a couple of gallons of warm milk mixed with honey down her throat from time to time before she lapsed back into unconsciousness. Cimmerine was very worried, but there wasn't much that she could do. Sick dragons are too large and heavy for normal nursing to be of much use. On the afternoon of the third day, Kazul woke up completely for the first time since her collapse.
Thank goodness,
said Cimmerine as Kazul shook her head experimentally and sat up.
I was beginning to think you were going to sleep for a month.
I might have, if I'd gotten more than a whiff of that smoke.
Kazul stretched her neck in one direction and her tail in the other, trying to work out some of the kinks.
If I'd known it was so dangerous, I'd never have brought any of that purple plant back with me. You might have done worse than sleep for a month. You might have...
She stopped. Unwilling to complete the thought.
I might have died? Unlikely. If a dragon isn't killed outright by something in the first 5 minutes, recovery is only a matter of time. That applies as much to Dragon's Bane as to a knight's magic sword.
Then why did you want that goo in the green jar?
The antidote? I wanted it because I didn't like the idea of spending a month recuperating when I didn't have to. And since...
A fit of coughing interrupted Kazul in mid-sentence. Cimmerian skipped backward out of the way. Frowning worriedly, she tossed a pinch of feverfew into the air and recited the verse from the fireproofing spell in case Kazul should lose control of her flame again.
Maybe you won't need a month to recover, but 3 days obviously isn't enough. You'd better lie back down before you choke.
I can't! I have to warn the king! If the wizards have had Dragonsbane for 3 days already...
She started coughing again and had to stop talking.
You stay here. I'll warn the king.
Tokars won't listen to you,
Kuzul said, but she settled back to the ground.
Roxim will, though. Start with him.
Roxim?
Cimmerian said doubtfully. She was afraid the gray-green dragon would want to go charging out after the wizards as soon as he heard they were up to something.
He'll listen to you, and the king will listen to him. It's not ideal, but it's the best we can do.
All right, I'll go see Roxim. You stay here and sleep.
When you get back...
I'll wake you and tell you what he said. Now go to sleep.
Kazul smiled slightly and closed her eyes. Cimmerian caught up a lamp and almost ran to the exit at the back of the cave. She was afraid that Kazul would think of something else and start talking again, and she didn't think talking would be good for her. In the tunnel outside, Cimmerian paused, trying to remember the directions to Roxim's cave. She had memorized a map in the library that showed most of the twists and turns of the dragon's tunnels, but she knew from experience that in the miles of gray stone corridors, it was difficult to keep track of where she was.
Left, left. Fifth right, past the little chamber. Right again, on past the iron gate. Two lefts to the third cave down,
she muttered to herself.
I wish Roxham's cave were closer.
Still muttering, she started off. Though she was being very careful, Cimmerian had to backtrack twice during the first part of her trip when a mistake in counting corridors led her to a dead end. When she finally saw the iron gate that led into the caves of fire and night, she sighed in relief. The tricky part was over, and the rest of the trip would be easy. She held her lamp up and quickened her step, hoping to make up some of the time she had lost on her detours. Then, as she reached the bars that blocked the entrance to the caves of fire and night, she stopped short. There was someone sitting on the ground on the other side of the gate. Cimmerian had almost missed seeing him, and no wonder. His clothes, though well cut, were the same dark gray as the stone of the tunnel walls, and he was curled into a lumpy, dejected ball. He looked like a large rock. If he hadn't moved his hand as she passed, Cimmerian would never have realized he was alive. The man on the other side of the bars raised his head, and Cimmerian saw with shock that his hair and skin were the same dark, even gray as his clothes. His eyes, too, were gray, and their expression was apologetic.
Forgive me for startling you,
the man said, climbing ponderously to his feet.
I didn't see you coming.
He made a stiff, formal bow.
Who are you, and what are you doing in there?
I'm a prince, and I'm reaping the rewards of my folly.
What folly?
It's a long story.
Somehow they always seem to be long. You haven't come to rescue me from the dragons, have you? Because if you have, I'm not going to let you out of there. I haven't got time to spend an hour arguing today.
I have no interest whatever in dragons, I assure you. And if you would let me out, I'd be extremely grateful. Who are you, by the way?
Cimmerian, Princess of the Dragon Kazul,
Cimmerian said. She studied the prince for a moment and decided that he looked trustworthy.
All right, I'll let you out. Turn around and put your fingers in your ears.
What?
The prince said, looking considerably startled.
It's part of the spell to open the gate,
Cimmerian said. She wasn't about to let him overhear the words Kazul had used to unlock the door, even if he did look trustworthy. The prince shrugged and did as she directed. Quickly, Cimmerian recited,
By night and flame and shining rock, open thou thy hidden lock, Alberolingarn.
For an instant nothing happened, and Cimmerian was afraid she had not remembered the charm correctly. Then the iron gate swung silently open. The prince, whose back was to the gate, did not notice. Simrine touched his shoulder to get his attention, and her eyes widened.
Oh,
she said as he turned.
You're stone.
I know. It's part of that long story I mentioned earlier. I haven't gotten used to it yet.
He stepped through the gate, and it closed noiselessly behind him.
I'm afraid I don't have time to listen to stories just now. I have a rather urgent errand to run, so if you'll excuse me...
Can't I come with you?
Simmering stared at him.
Why do you want to do that?
The stone prince looked down at his feet with an embarrassed expression.
Well, actually I'm lost, and you seem to know your way around down here.
He glanced hopefully at Simmering's face, then sighed.
I suppose I can just wander around some more. I'll have to find a way out eventually.
You'll run into a dragon and get eaten.
I don't think it will hurt stone.
He sounded almost cheerful, as if he had only just realized that being made of stone might have some advantages.
Maybe not, but you're sure to give the dragon indigestion. Bother, I don't have time for this.
I could wait here if you're coming back this way.
Simmerine brightened, then frowned and shook her head.
No, one of the dragons might need to get into the caves of fire and night, or it might be the turn of those dratted wizards. You can't stay here.
Then...
I know. You can wait in the serving room just off the banquet hall. It's close. There's plenty of room. And I know no one's using it today because I checked the schedule for Ollie and Nora yesterday. I can take a shortcut out the back to get to Roxham's without losing any more time. Come on.
I really appreciate this.
The Stone Prince said as they started off.
You don't know what it's like being lost in the dark in these caves.
How did it happen?
The Stone Prince's expression became gloomy once more.
It's all that soothsayer's fault.
Soothsayer?
My father didn't think it was appropriate to invite fairies to a prince's christening, so he invited a soothsayer instead. The soothsayer took one look at me and said that I would grow up to do a great service for a king. I've been stuck with his blasted prophecy ever since.
It doesn't sound so terrible to me.
It wasn't at first. I had special tutors and all sorts of interesting things to prepare me for being of great service to a king. My father even sent me to a special school for people who are supposed to do special things.
Did you do well?
I was the top of my class,
the Stone Prince said with a flash of pride. His face fell again.
That's part of the problem.
I don't understand. This way, and can you walk a little faster, please? I'm in a hurry.
It's been 3 years since I graduated, and everyone's still waiting for me to do something spectacular,
the Stone Prince said, lengthening his stride.
The rest of my classmates are already making names for themselves. George started killing dragons right away, and Art went straight home and pulled some sort of magic sword out of a rock. Even the ones nobody expected to amount to much have done something. All Jack wanted to do was go back to his mother's farm and raise beans, and he ended up stealing a magic harp and killing a giant, and all sorts of things. I'm the only one who hasn't succeeded.
Why not?
The Stone Prince sighed again.
I don't know. At first, it seemed as if I wouldn't have any trouble finding a king to serve. Every time there was a war, both kings asked me to lead their armies, and every king for miles around who'd lost his throne to a usurper sent a messenger to my father's court. It should have been simple, only they were always so worried about whether I was going to side with their enemies that it was easier not to pick anyone.
I see,
said Simmerine. Privately, she thought that the Stone Prince had been rather wishy-washy. Some of her opinion must have crept into her tone, because the Stone Prince nodded glumly.
You're right. It was a mistake. As long as I didn't pick a king to serve, all the messengers and ambassadors and envoys stayed, hoping to persuade me. The inns around the castle were stuffed with them. It got to the point where I couldn't show my face without at least three of them pouncing on me. Finally, I couldn't stand it anymore, and I ran away. It was a relief at first, not having everyone hovering over me, waiting for me to do something great. But after a while, I started feeling uncomfortable. Then I realized that even if nobody around me expected me to do anything special in the service of a king, I expected me to do something. I was so flustered that I ran up to the next palace I saw and asked whether the king needed any services done. It turned out that he was ill, and his doctors had told him that the only thing that would cure him was a drink of the water of healing from the caves of fire and night. So I left to get it at once.
So that's what you were doing.
The Stone Prince gave her another gloomy nod.
I should have known better. That king had three sons, and the first two had already gone off to get the water and failed. Anyone with sense would have seen that the youngest son was the one who would succeed. It sticks out all over. But I was too eager to do my great service and get it over with, and I didn't stop and think.
What happened?
It took me a long time to find the caves of fire and night. But once I did, it wasn't hard to find the water of healing. The chamber's getting crowded. All the princes who have tried to get the water and failed have been turned into slabs of rock.
I know, I've seen them. Watch out for your head, the ceiling is low along here.
Then you know what it's like, and you've seen the two dippers on the wall by the spring.
The stone prince's shoulders sagged.
I knew I should use the tin one. It was one of the first things we learned at school, but I thought it wouldn't do any harm if I just looked at the gold one. So I took it off the wall, and as soon as I touched it, I started to stiffen up.
Said Cimmerine. The stone prince was obviously well aware of how foolishly he had behaved. She saw no reason to make him feel worse by pointing it out to him again.
So I stuck my arm in the spring.
You stuck your arm? Oh, I see. That was clever.
Do you really think so? I thought that since the water from the spring is going to turn all the slabs of stone back into princes when someone finally succeeds in the quest, then the water ought to keep me from turning into a slab of stone in the first place. Only it didn't work the way I expected.
He finished disconsolately.
I can see that. But at least you can still do things. It would be much worse to have to lie there waiting for the right prince to come along and break the spell.
I wouldn't have had to lie there very long. That king's youngest son is going to arrive any day now, I just know it. Anyway, if I were a slab of stone, I wouldn't know about it until it was all over, and I'd been turned back into a prince again.
How do you know? Have you ever been a stone slab?
The stone prince looked startled.
No, I haven't. I never thought of that.
Well, start thinking now. Here's the service room. Wait here for me, and don't go wandering off if I'm late getting back. I don't know how long this errand is going to take, and it would be very awkward for me if the dragons found you roaming through their tunnels.
I'll remember. But what do I do if someone comes in?
Duck into the banquet area,
Cimmerine said, showing him.
And if someone comes in there, too, curl up in the corner and pretend you're a rock.
All right.
Cimmerine did not like leaving him, but she was even less enthusiastic about taking him to see Roxham. Roxham probably wouldn't object to the prince himself, though Cimmerine suspected that there might have been some difficulty over his proposed theft of the Water of Healing. But explaining everything to the Grey-Green Dragon would take hours. Roxham was nice, but he tended to take a simple view of things, and the prince's situation was anything but simple. So Cimmerine gave the prince one more warning, just to make sure he understood, and started off toward Roxham's cave to finish her errand. 12. In which Cimmerine calls on a dragon, and the stone prince discovers a plot. The shortcut to Roxham's worked just as well as Cimmerine had hoped, and she even made up some of the time she had lost earlier. Roxham was in, too. She could hear the scraping of his scales as he moved around inside. She stepped up to the entrance of the cave and called,
"Dragon Roxham!"
Something round and shiny flew through the air, missing Cimmerine by inches. It hit the wall of the tunnel with a loud clang and slid rattling to the floor. Cimmerine jumped.
"Roxham!"
"What's this?"
the dragon said, poking his nose out of the cave entrance.
"I am Cimmerine, princess to the dragon Kazul, and I offer you greetings and good fortune in all your endeavors."
Cimmerine thought it best to be particularly polite, in case Roxham were in a bad mood. She suspected he might be. In her experience, someone in a good mood did not throw things at visitors.
"Very good. Nice to see you again and all that, but I haven't got time for visitors at the moment. Sorry."
"I'm not a visitor, exactly. Kazul sent me with a message for you."
"Oh, well, that's different. Just hand me that shield there, would you?"
Cimmerine picked up the shield from the floor of the tunnel. There was a large dent in one side where it had hit the tunnel wall, and several smaller ones over the rest of it from banging against things on its way to the tunnel floor.
"You ought to be more careful. Just look at this."
"Ha!"
Roxham snorted, examining the dents.
"Shoddy work. Shoddy work. That's the problem. In my day, you could roll a knight in full armor down the far side of the Vanishing Mountain and bounce him off two or three cliffs without so much as scratching his surface, much less denting it. This cheap modern stuff just doesn't hold up.
If you know it doesn't hold up, you shouldn't throw it around like that. You almost hit me.
Roxham shifted uncomfortably.
Sorry, didn't mean anything by it.
All right. But next time, look before you throw things,
Cimmerine said, handing him the shield.
I always have this problem when I try to find something. Never know where to look. That's frustrating. And next thing you know, I'm pitching armor at the walls. Bad habit, but hard to break.
Maybe I could help. After I give you Kazul's message, that is.
Don't need help to put dents in things. Comes to that, I don't really want it.
I didn't mean help throw things. I meant help find whatever you're looking for.
Oh, that. Well, come in, then.
Cimmerine followed the dragon into a moderately large cave, similar to the one Kazul used as a living area. Roxham's cave, however, was full of clutter. Cimmerine had to pick her way past bits of armor, one half of a pair of bookends, a box of tea, a pink scroll, three mismatched kitchen pots, a small wooden statue, a broken flute, and four partially burned candles. Roxham walked straight over the mess as if it weren't there, squashing a mangy-looking stuffed pigeon and flattening a tin cup in passing. He dropped the shield on a pile of silk flowers and waved Cimmerine to a seat on a large wooden chest near one wall.
Now, what's this message of Kazul's?
It's about the wizards,
Cimmerine said, settling gingerly onto the dusty surface of the chest. She made a mental note to find Roxham a nice princess as soon as she possibly could.
Alianora and I found one of them picking dragon's bane a few days ago, and Kazul thinks King Tokaz will listen to you if you tell him about it.
So that's where they got it. Pity you didn't mention it sooner.
Cimmerine got a sinking feeling.
What do you mean?
Somebody poisoned King Tokaz this morning. Slipped some dragon's bane in his coffee. Fast acting. Nothing to be done. Now we need a new king.
That's awful. Do you know who did it?
Those dratted wizards, that's who. It's obvious. Stupid thing to do. Has to be wizards, by George. But Warog won't listen to me.
Warog? What's Warog got to do with it?
He's in charge of the investigation. Taking his time about it, too, if you ask me.
But if the king was only poisoned this morning...
What does that have to do with it? Besides, if Warog doesn't hurry, he won't have the culprit in hand by the time the trials start tomorrow.
Trials? You mean with Colin Stone to choose the new king?
Cimmerine said with some hesitation. She did not see how it could be a trial for the person who had killed the king if they hadn't caught him yet. But she was not completely certain that the dragons didn't have some way of getting around the problem and trying him anyway.
That's it. And before I leave, I have to find that emerald I picked up 50 years ago. Coronation present for the new king.
But you haven't got a new king yet,
Cimmerine said, feeling somewhat bewildered.
And what if you're the king?
Roxham smiled broadly.
Knew you were a nice gal. Me, the king. I rather like the idea. I still have to find the emerald, though. Wouldn't do to show up at the trials without a coronation present. Rum thing to do. Overconfident.
Though she was upset and more than a little worried, Cimmerine helped Roxham as best she could. After about an hour of poking through the clutter, Cimmerine found the emerald, wrapped in a gold-embroidered handkerchief and stuffed into the mouth of a large brass horn. Roxham thanked her and invited her to stay to tea, but Cimmerine politely declined. She was eager to get back to Kazul, to tell her what had happened and decide what to do next. Cimmerine hurried back to Kazul's cave by the shortest route, thinking so hard about Tokaz's death that she forgot everything else. She found Kazul sleeping and was forced to wake her, despite her worries about the dragon's health. She knew K'Zul would want to hear about the King of the Dragons as soon as possible, and she wanted to hear what K'Zul made of Warog's involvement in the investigation.
Back already?
K'Zul said, opening her eyes.
Didn't Roxum get you in to see King Tokaz?
No, Cimmerine said. She hesitated, uncertain of the best way to break the news.
It was too late.
Too late?
K'Zul raised her head, startled. She eyed Cimmerine briefly, then said,
All right, let's have it. What's happened?
King Tokaz was poisoned this morning. Roxum said someone put dragon's bane in his coffee.
K'Zul snorted.
Somebody knew Tokaz pretty well.
Seeing Cimmerine's surprised expression, she explained,
Tokaz drank Turkish coffee every morning. Stuff is strong enough to take the roof off your mouth. It's why no one ever went to talk to him over breakfast. You could boil a whole field's worth of dragon's bane in Turkish coffee without changing the taste enough to notice, or the texture.
Cimmerine tried to imagine coffee, even Turkish coffee, strong enough to take the roof off a dragon's mouth, and failed.
I told Roxum about the wizard Alianora and I met, and Roxum said I ought to tell Warog, because Warog is in charge of finding the poisoner, but...
But when you caught Antarel picking Dragon's Bane, he thought Warog had sent you.
K'Zul said,
If Warog's mixed up with wizards...
She broke off, coughing. Cimmerine watched her anxiously, but the coughing spasm did not last long.
I don't like this,
K'Zul finished when she got her breath back.
I don't either. But what can we do about it?
K'Zul frowned and said nothing. For several minutes, the two sat and thought in silence. Then K'Zul said,
We can't do anything until the new king has been chosen. Did Roxum say when the testing will be?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
K'Zul surged to her feet.
Why didn't you say so at once? If I'm to be at the Ford of Whispering Snakes tomorrow, I have to-
Lie down!
K'Zul looked at her in surprise and collapsed in another fit of coughing. Cimmerine waited until the dragon's coughing had subsided, then said sternly,
You're in no condition to go hauling rocks all over the countryside. I'd be surprised if you can even fly as far as the end of the pass. I think you're going to have to give up on the trials this time around.
K'Zul made a choking noise. Cimmerine looked at her in alarm, then realized that the dragon was laughing.
It's not optional, princess! All the adult dragons in the Mountains of Mourning are required to show up, no matter what condition they're in.
But...
There is no acceptable excuse for missing the testing of a new king. None. And I have a great deal to do before I leave, so if you'll-
If anything needs to be done around here, I'll do it. If you don't rest, you won't be able to fly at all, and then how will you get to the ford?
A reasonable point,
K'Zul said, settling reluctantly back into place.
Very well. The first thing I need is a coronation present for the new king. There's a jeweled helmet on a shelf in the second storeroom that might do. Bring it out so I can take a look at it.
Cimmerine spent the rest of the evening running errands for K'Zul. Besides choosing a coronation gift, K'Zul rejected the helmet and two crowns before deciding on a scepter made of gold and crystal. Innumerable messages had to be delivered to various dragons who were in charge of arranging the trials. This one had to be informed of K'Zul's ill health so that it could be taken into account when the order of the testing was established. That one had to be told that K'Zul would not be able to join the coronation procession. Substitutes had to be found to perform K'Zul's various ceremonial duties. Then their names had to be approved by a surly dragon in charge of protocol. And finally, the substitutions had to be recorded on all the lists of all the dragons who were managing each of the events. It reminded Cimmerine strongly of Linderwall and her parents' court. By the time the last arrangement had been made and the last message delivered, it was very late, and Cimmerine was exhausted. She was also very glad she had not let K'Zul do all the running around. The dragon, who had slept most of the time Cimmerine was out, was looking much better, even in the dim light of Cimmerine's lamp. Tired but satisfied, Cimmerine went to her room and dropped into bed. Cimmerine was up early the next morning, stirring a dozen ostrich eggs in a large iron kettle for Kazul's breakfast. Kazul ate all of them, then slid out of the cave and prepared to leave for the ford of Whispering Snakes.
Don't fret, Princess. The testing doesn't start until 10. I have plenty of time to get there, even if I stop to rest now and then.
Her voice sounded much better than it had the day before, and it no longer seemed to rasp her throat.
While I'm gone, why don't you visit Warog's princess? See if she's noticed anything odd these past few days. We need to know as much as we can before we talk to the new king about Warog and the wizards.
All right, as soon as I'm done with the dishes.
Kazul turned and leaped into the air, her wings churning clouds of dust from the dry surface of the ground. Cimmerine squinted after her and shouted,
"Good luck!"
Kazul's wings dipped in answer before the dragon soared out of sight behind the shoulder of the next mountain. Cimmerine stood looking after Kazul, her forehead wrinkling in worry. After a moment, she shook herself and went inside. She had work to do. Washing the dishes did not take long, and as soon as she was done, Cimmerine set off to visit Alianora. The tunnels and passageways were silent and empty, and Cimmerine's footsteps echoed eerily through the darkness. She began to wish she had taken the longer route along the outside of the mountain. She had not realized that the Dragon City would seem so strange and lifeless, with all the dragons gone.
Psst! Cimmerine!
Cimmerine jumped. She whirled in the direction of the voice, raising her lamp like a club, and Alianora stepped out of the adjoining tunnel and into the circle of light. In one hand, she clutched a large bucket, three-quarters full of soapy water, and she looked rather pale.
"Alianora," Cimmerine said, lowering her arm. "What are you doing out here?"
"Shh,"
Alianora said. She looked nervously over her shoulder.
"Warog told me to scrub off the table in the banquet room while everyone was away, and I heard someone moving around in there, even though everyone but us is gone. And I dropped my lamp and..."
"Oh, my goodness! The Stone Prince! I'd forgotten all about him!"
"Who?"
"The Stone Prince."
Quickly, Cimmerine explained how she had found and hidden him the day before.
"And I hadn't thought about it until now, but this is the perfect time to get him out of the mountains. All the dragons are gone and no one will see him. Come on, before I forget again."
Alianora nodded dubiously, and the two girls headed for the banquet room. When they arrived, Cimmerine went in first, holding her lamp high.
"Prince, are you there? It's me, Cimmerine."
"Yes, I'm here,"
said the Stone Prince, unfolding stiffly from a gray lump in the corner.
"I'm glad you're back. Who's this you've brought with you?"
"Princess Alianora of the Duchy of Tor-on-Marsh. She's the princess of the dragon Warog just now."
"Does her father need a great service done for him?"
"Not that I know of, unless you're good at getting rid of aunts, but that would be more of a service to Alianora than to her father."
"I can think of nothing that would make me happier,"
the prince said with evident admiration as he bowed stiffly to Alianora.
"Good afternoon, princess. Or should it be good evening? It's hard to tell without windows."
Alianora blushed and looked down at her bucket without answering.
"Actually, it's good morning,"
Cimmerine told the prince.
"I'm sorry it took me so long to come back for you, but, well, a lot has been going on."
Alianora looked up sharply.
"You've been sitting here in the dark all night?"
She shuddered.
"You could at least have left him a candle, Cimmerine."
"Thank you for the thought, Princess Alianora, but it's just as well she didn't. If I'd been sitting here with a lit candle, they'd have noticed me right away. And an unlit candle isn't much use in the dark, is it?"
"What do you mean? Who would have noticed you?"
"The dragon and the two men he was talking to. I think they were wizards."
"What?"
"Well, they talked as if they were wizards. They weren't carrying staffs, though."
"What did they look like?"
"They were both tall, and they both had beards. The older ones was gray, and the younger ones was brown."
"And Terrell and Zeminar. And they were talking to a dragon?"
The Stone Prince nodded.
"Then they wouldn't have been carrying staffs. Dragons are allergic to them. Did you hear what they said?"
"Something about a contest. The wizards were going to fix it so this dragon would win. It sounded like a kind of cross-country race, and the wizards were going to hide along the path and help the dragon out somehow. I'm afraid I'm not very clear about that part. Spells aren't my specialty. I'm much better at hopeless causes."
Alianora and Cimmerine exchanged appalled glances.
"The trials with Colin Stone to pick the new king."
"Which dragon? Do you know which dragon they were talking to?"
"I only heard the name once,"
the prince said. He sounded apologetic and a little embarrassed.
And I don't think I got it right. It's too silly.
Tell us.
Well, it sounded like warthog,
the prince said, in an even more apologetic tone than before.
Could it have been warog?
That's it. I knew it couldn't really have been warthog.
What a pity you remembered,
said a voice from the entrance into the banquet hall.